Blog Talk Radio.
Let her go, Chadwick. Turn up your radio. Build a whiskey and drink it down slow. It's Whiskey Bent in the Pit. If you don't listen, boy, you ain't shit outlaw barbecue show. He's an all-night smoker, a cold beer holder. His spare ribs will blow your mind. And with his Cosmos Q and his Green Mountain grills, he'll walk the stage every time. Turn on your radio, crack a beer, Chad's ready to go. It's Whiskey Ben in the Pit all night, late night. If you don't listen, boy, you ain't right. Outlaw Barbecue Show. Whiskey Ben in the Pit radio show. Good for the egg shakes and saggy. Can I get a raise? Hell, come on.
All right, guys, there it is. Tonight, Tuesday, July 16th. 2013, and it's this week's edition, actually this month's edition, of Whiskey Bent BBQ in the Pit. Missed you guys. 3 weeks gone, a little too long, but nice, revitalized, had a good time. Started out in Louisiana for a little bit of work there in New Orleans. Went up and spent about 2.5 weeks with the family in Seabrook, New Hampshire, which was great, pretty hot. But it was a nice time all in all. Got to do a lot of cooking. When, you know, average size of the family, when you put my wife's side together, it's probably about 10 to 12 people. So whenever you cook, you put on a nice feed. So got to do plenty of barbecue and grilling. And then a week over in France for our worldwide sales meeting for the day job. So we are back. The only thing I want to say out of that is if you guys can, never fly Delta Airline again. Long story short, 13 hours delayed from Boston to Marseille, France. Definitely sucked. And for that, I should be happy with a $200 voucher. But we'll get off that soapbox. Good to be back. Good show tonight. We have Chris Grove from Nibble Me This. One of the blogs I've always really enjoyed going to. If you're looking to cook something a little different, a little unique, Chris always has some really, really good recipes over there. And so we're going to talk to Chris tonight, first time in the pit. We're going to make him feel welcome, hopefully have a good time talking about how he got into this. And then also he did a pretty cool trip to the Meyer Cattle Ranch. So we're all fans of Meyer's beef here in the Whiskey Bent household. We get that from our friends over at Master Purveyors in Tampa, and we've been cooking those Meyer briskets for a while now, and I really, really like them. They are they're very, very good. That tour, what he saw, what he thought was interesting, et cetera. So we are definitely looking forward to having him on the show tonight. Then we're going to back it up with our good friend, numerous times in the pit, Rob Bagby, Swamp Boys Barbecue. Coming off of his huge Barbecue Pitmasters win here a couple weeks ago. It was great to see Rub and Amy take that down and just look forward to chit-chatting with him, catching up about the show, what's the rest of the year look like for him, all that good stuff. Rub's always a great interview, and it's always good to have him in the house. So we will wrap up with Rub tonight. Depending on how late we go with Rub, we may actually have an open 10 or 15-minute session for any of you guys that have missed me and just want to call in and chit-chat. So we may end up doing that also. So we're just going to kind of play it by ear, see what we end up with time-wise, and go from there. But it's going to be a fun 2 hours. Going to talk a lot of competition barbecue and grilling. Appreciate everybody getting in the chat there. I know I probably got you guys out of habit being gone the last 3 weeks, but we should be good to go here over the next couple of weeks. A lot of exciting stuff going on. Can't tell you about really any of it yet, but some pretty cool things going on for the Whiskey and Barbecue team and some different things. So we will hopefully be able to share some of that here in the coming weeks. Was very excited to get home from my travels and find a book waiting for me. If you remember when we had George Hensler on a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about his new book he had worked on, Totally Q, second book from the Hensler Enterprises. Good book. I am about halfway through it. Had to force myself to put it down. If you're just looking for, I'm going to save my review for next week when I have George on the show. But if you've ever met George, he's a funny as hell, witty guy, give you the shirt off his back. I mean, just a fine guy. But at the same time, man, he's got a lot of charm, a lot of wittiness, a lot of character to him. So it's really, really, and I love the way he writes. So, I mean, there's some really funny anecdotes, you know, different things like that, that are just really, really fun about the book. But goes through a history of barbecue. I mean, as a guy that thinks I'm pretty boned up on the art of you know, grilling and things like that, I've learned a ton from it. Like I said, I'm only halfway through it. So I definitely am going to get through it the rest of this week. Just been trying to catch up on everything else here since getting back. But I will definitely have George on next week, and we'll do a review of the book and let you know where you can get it and all that fun stuff. But it is definitely worth it. I'd go out and buy it. I think it'll be a great great present for that person in your family that loves barbecue and grilling. Really, really good book. So we're going to talk about that next week. So I was really happy to get that. One more thing I'm really, really happy about, and you guys have been – I've gotten more emails, Facebook messages, direct messages on Twitter about when is the application for the Kids Pack Barbecue Throwdown going to be ready? September 6th and 7th in Lakeland. It is now out. Go to www.lakelandbbqthrowdown.com. Lakelandbbqthrowdown.com. It is there. My team member, Jared Hatcher, has been working tirelessly on getting that put together. He's now the official contest organizer. So we got it all there, guys. Go sign up. I think it's $240 if you sign up before the August 12th deadline. Not bad at all, man. That's what happens when cook teams put on contest for cook teams. We're going to be paying 1 through 10 overall. Or 1 through 10 in each category, $500 for first place, all the way down to $50 for 6 through 10. Grand champion's going to walk away with $2,000. Reserve champion's going to walk away with $1,000. Going to have a pretty cool backyard division. Also, so right now we're thinking we can get 40 pro teams and 10 backyard teams. That 10 backyard teams is going to be a hard cutoff, guys. So if you want to cook backyard, it is going to be a hard cutoff. That's we're only doing 10 backyard teams. So know that, we believe we've got space for around 40, pro teams. We could possibly extend that with a little bit of creativity. So just get your stuff in early. So, I mean, we definitely think from the feedback we've got, it's going to be a sold out contest. We hope so. Just remember the proceeds of everything for this contest is, going to kidspack.org. You know, that and the Polk Project. You know, just great. You know, basically kids that can't, you know, that they're homeless. We make sure those kids go home with a backpack every Friday so they can get through the weekend, you know, with some nutritious food. People's Choice Award is going to be pretty damn awesome. So to win People's Choice, you're going to have, we're going to do it by counting the most Chef Boyardee beefaronis. So if somebody comes there, they're going to sample your food. And they may come with a case of Chef Boyardee beefaroni. Or, you know what, guys? You can just maybe go to Sam's and buy it and stack the ballot box. I don't care. Because the Chef Boyardee beefaroni is going to go to those kids. So, yeah, hey, if you want to go buy 100 of them and turn them in as your people's choice, you know, that's fine. Just know somebody else may have 100, 120. So that's going to be really interesting. We think the turnout's going to be great. We want to encourage folks to vend if you can, even to the point of if you decide to vend, we're going to provide you volunteers. How's that sound, Jim Elster? Can that convince you to do some vending out there? We're going to provide Kids Pack volunteers to help you sell your food. And I will tell you, we had Kids Pack in our tent at Pigfest this year, and they just vended some basic items, and those folks are hard workers, man. We gave them all the direction, and they just went with it. I mean, we really literally cooked the food, put it in a cooler, and they took it all from there. And they're really, really hardworking folks. They really, really believe in this cause, and we're wanting to do that by providing the volunteers. Because, you know, if you've ever been to contest in this area, I mean, it's going to get a good turnout. We're hoping we get at least 10,000 people through the gates, and I think that's going to be achievable, so we'll see. But anyway, LakelandBBQThrowdown.com, www.LakelandBBQThrowdown.com. Register before August 12th. 240 buckaroos, so $10,000 total payout. I think it's going to promise to be a good one. I mean, we're hard at it, so I'll be reaching out to some of you guys that are listening, because I'm in charge of all the cook team stuff, so your Friday night dinner, gift bags, all those things will be headed up by your host, trying to put together some nice things for you guys. So any comments or suggestions you have, just reach out to me, and we'll definitely take them into consideration. Another cool contest I want to talk about real quick before we get over to our good buddy Chris Grove, and that is the Swino's Imperial Polk County Invitational. That's going to be taking place August 2nd and 3rd at the American Legion, where the Mulberry Contest is. Only Imperial Polk County, guys. Sorry for any folks outside of it. August 2nd and 3rd, $200 entry fee. This baby's going to be winner take all, $2,000. It's going to be a good time. If you know those Swino's boys, it's going to be a blast. Cook team dinner on Friday night. Low Country Boil with a live 13-piece band. Those guys love anything more than beer and barbecue. It's music, so you know that's going to be good. But yeah, go check it out. Swinos.com. Click on the link there for the Imperial Polk County Barbecue Invitational, and it'll take you right there, and you can get signed up, pay right there, and be good to go. So we look forward to cooking that one, and hope to see a lot of you guys there. I think they're going to cap it out at 20, based on 20 teams, so it should be a good time. Real quick before we go over to Chris, want to tell you, man, Southern Bread Smokers, you guys know Adam and I have been working on this for a while. We've got some units out now on the West Coast. Sterling Ball from Big Papa Smokers is checking one out. We've got the guy Mike over at Barbecue Island there in Arizona with a couple units. We're starting to see some great coverage. Jay Bickle over at Pitmasters Depot, he as soon as he gets one, it's sold. So he's been moving some units. It's really, really awesome. So you know, go check us out, southernbreadsmokers.com. I'm looking forward. I got my new one coming in. It's gonna be sweet, boys. It may be the I'm gonna let you in on a little secret. It may be the first cooker you've ever seen completely coated in Rhino liner. Adam calls that Chad proofing it, because every time he puts a nice pretty paint job on it for me, I scratch it, ding the hell out of it, whatever the case may be. So I think we're just going straight Rhino liner on this bad boy. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's gonna look pretty tight with the chrome Whiskey Bent logo and the Rhino liner kind of murdered out base coat. So we're gonna see about that. So go check it out, southernbreadsmokers.com. That being said, let me pull up Chris. Chris, you there, buddy?
Yeah, hey, Chad. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man. Doing real well. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm glad to be here after you've been off the air for 3 weeks. You had people in withdrawals, man.
Man, I'll tell you what. Believe me, I was going through withdrawals. I was missing having it, but up in New Hampshire, our wireless wasn't the strongest, and somebody may or may not forgot their gear. For the show, so I didn't get that. And then France, it's just too much of a dang time difference. I was already walking around like a zombie most of the week, but it is good to be back. And I know, man, you've never really talked before. We do a lot of chatting back and forth in Greg Rimpey's show in the chat room there, which is another great show. For any of you guys that are listening for the first time or whatever, make sure and check that out tonight, 9 o'clock on the Outdoor Cooking Channel. Greg's a great host and always has really good guests. So, all right, so let's talk a little bit, Chris. You know, I've read through, I've always checked out your site. I think it's, as I kind of said in the show open, I think it's one of those things, if I'm looking for something where I just want to get a little more creative, I just don't want to go cook a ribeye. I'd like to cook something a little bit different. I always tend to go over to your site and I can find something that that kind of inspires me and motivates me to do something a little bit different. You know, what kind of, know, because I think what a lot of people don't pay attention to, a lot of people think, oh, it's a blog, it's not that hard. But when you put out something of the quality of what you do, I don't think people understand kind of the time that goes into that.
Oh, yeah. Each post is probably about, I would guess, 3 or 4 hours of work at the minimum. Because, you know, in addition to trying to come up with the recipes, that's the hardest part. You know, because so many times you have an idea and you're like, oh, wait, I did that 2 years ago. That's one thing. But even once you have the recipe done, cooked, and everything, if that's perfect, you know, you got to take the pictures, you got to process them, you have to write it up. It's it is very time consuming. And, you know, when I work a full time job, you know, a lot of these bloggers, they make enough money from their blogs that they don't even, you know, that is their job. For me, it's a hobby. And, you know, you know how it is. You got real life you got to fit in.
Yeah, those damn real jobs, man. They're no fun.
Yeah,
but they pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly. It lets us do the fun stuff, like do barbecue contests and travel and stuff. So yeah, it's definitely been worth it. But yeah, it's a lot of effort, and I think my family's very supportive, because sometimes we're eating at 8:30 at night because I had to get the picture just right, or I had to get the garnish, just little things, and before you know it, all of a sudden dinner's 2 hours late.
I
make me the most popular guy in the house.
No, it definitely doesn't, unless the kids are wanting to stay up late. But nobody wants to stay up late when they're starving.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But good deal.
Yeah,
so
these days it's really.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just said that these days it's really tough. My son's 14, and just about to turn 14, and he's got football, so he's got practice 6 days a week for 2 hours a night, so it makes it even more fun trying to fit it in. You'll be seeing a lot more grilling and shortcut recipes from me in the next 6 weeks.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. You spoke of, and it's always been something that interests me, and it kind of gets off pattern, but that's kind of what we do here. The monetizing of blogs, how do people do that? Is it through link clicks? Is it through full out sponsorships, or how's that work?
There's a couple different ways. Most of the people do ad services like Google AdSense or the Foodie Blog Roll has an ad service where you basically are leasing out space on your blog. They sell it in units, and they have, each one has their own requirements. Some will let you advertise with others, some you will. And for me, I've never really sought out advertisers. Kingsford has been a great sponsor from the start. Craig Court Grills, are great. They came to me and said, hey, here, I like your blog. Do you want try out one of our grates? So Craig Court was my first, and then Kingsford picked me up and worked with Bush Beans for some special projects here and there, same with McCormick's. So for me, I just deal specifically with short-term projects with different vendors. But to be mm-hmm. honest with you, I'm kind of trending away from that because, I want to be able to do what I want to do and not have someone else telling me, well, it needs to be this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I'll stay with Kingsford just because you can't beat a sponsor like that,
right.
And probably Johnsonville. But you may have noticed, I've started paring down some of the ones I've done just because it became more of a job and less fun again. I was doing a post because I had to, and I had to do a certain product, and that just wasn't fun for me.
Well, you're exactly right. As you were describing that, the first thing that went in my mind is when you're having to follow somebody else's rules or at that point, yeah, you're right. Now your hobbies became work,
right.
and that takes some of the love and, some of the, and plus, I mean, you did this for a reason. You want to share Chris Groves recipes and thoughts, not feel like you're being pulled in another direction. So I can respect that as far as, kind of wanting to keep it, as it started.
Yeah, keep it more organic. And I can't complain because this has offered the opportunities that I never would have gotten in a million years. Back in April, I got to go help Chris Lilly out when he was doing his photo shoots for his new cookbook. That wouldn't have happened without this blog. I would have never met him. It's little things like that. Getting to go to the Kingsford Invitational, those kind of things. You just can't, you can't pay for that kind of stuff.
No,
those are experiences that are once in a lifetime.
No, you're absolutely right. What, if you don't mind me asking, what does traffic look like on your blog?
Dear, right now it's running about 42,000 unique visitors. You have to go by unique visitors because you get spam traffic all the time. I mean, my actual count's up like 90,000, so that tells you over half of them are, you know, robots and stuff searching it. But yeah, about 42,000 hits right now during the winter. It tapers off in the 30s.
Wow, that's still that's really impressive. Really impressive.
Yeah.
So a little bit about, you know, how you got started. You know, it kind of seems like, you know, you just kind of fell in love with barbecue at a young age and, you know, are really kind of a self-taught guy. Is that correct?
That's exactly it. When I first ever had real barbecue, I grew up in Florida but spent summers in North Carolina on my grandmother's farm in eastern North Carolina. And I mean, the first thing I ever tasted that was like just, you know, so good that I consciously thought I had to have more of that was some barbecue they had brought back from the volunteer fire department. They did a pork shoulder fundraiser every year. And, you know, I fell in love with that taste. And over the years, you know, I went to a lot of barbecue restaurants and never found anything like it. And so in around about 2000, my grandmother started getting kind of sick. She knew the people that at the fire department, and she actually got me the vinegar sauce recipe that they use.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out, got me a pork butt, threw it in the crock pot, and was totally disappointed. And then that started it from there. It was like the addiction that we all have. You know, you're like, well, that sucked. I got to do it right now. And you went out and, you know, bought a Brinkman smoker, and that was a little bit better. And then you end up, you know, getting something a little bit nicer. And that's how it kind of all started, just trying to get that same taste that I had when I was 7 years old in North Carolina.
You know, and I love the way you described that on your blog. You know, to me, that you talk about that tangy vinegary taste, and just two pieces of white bread. That's the way barbecue to me is best served, is just on some fresh white bread, because, you know, it's just there as a medium, and all the other flavors get to come through.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's pork, vinegar, salt, and pepper, you know. Hey, there you go.
Yeah, no fancy three or four layers of different rubs. It's pretty basic.
Yeah,
and, but
it works in competition. But I guarantee if I took that recipe into a competition, I'd get hammered. So.
Right. Nope, you're absolutely right. So now it looks like, you know, and I had one of those Brinkmans too, and it amazes me that we must have all really loved barbecue, because there's no way that smoker helped any of us get any better at what we did. It just made us save our pennies to move to the next thing.
Yeah, I remember wrestling with temps on that thing, and, you know, I was happy if I could keep a 25-degree temperature range either way. You know?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, 275, that's close enough.
Yeah, exactly. That thing.
I was cooking hot and fast before I was trying to.
Yeah, exactly, before you even knew what it was. So you're cooking on an egg now? Is that what you do most of your recipes on?
Yeah, I've got I have a green egg, and my wife has a green egg. She uses hers mostly for baking and casseroles and stuff, but I'll steal it every now and then. She just won't let me smoke on hers. So we got two large, big green eggs, and then I have a, just your basic backyard weekend warrior deal from Walmart, one of the Smoke Hollow grills, where it has a small offset smoker, charcoal grill, gas grill, and sear burn, you know, one of those combos type deals.
Yeah.
I've got one of those, but that's pretty much just for grilling and stuff like that.
That's cool. I'll tell you, the eggs are hard to beat, man. I do classes at a place that's an egg dealer, and and obviously I've got to do some different stuff on them, and I'm just impressed with it as its versatility as a cooker.
Yeah, my only problem with them is just their size and being fragile like they are. They're not cut out for really for competition. I mean, I know you got people out there doing it, but I don't have that kind of patience. So I've kind of got my eye. I'm looking for a nice used trailer rig, so something, you know, that I can not have to break apart and, you know, haul up there. You know, I can just hook it up to the car and go, kind of a thing.
Right. You know, and I got to say, man, there's some good ones out there. I mean, so you're talking about like a trailer offset pit?
Yeah. You know, my wife loves the Jambo, but she didn't, you know, then I showed her the price, and so she's kind of backed off of that. But yeah, I'm there's a couple I have, you know, I would love to get a Meadow Creek or something like that. Something reverse flow offset. I'd love to get an insulated firebox. I mean, I would do a stump. So I just got to find the right thing.
Well, you know, I will tell you, I cooked on a Meadow Creek. I'd never cooked on one before. I cooked on a 250 up in Rhode Island a couple weeks ago, thanks to my buddies over at Zombie Barbecue. And I was thoroughly impressed. I mean, that 250 is a big cooker. And I was thoroughly surprised at the lack of tending it took, being a woody, you know, stick burner.
Right.
It's a very, very well-made cooker. I've got a Lang too, you know, same reverse flow type deal, and it's a good cooker also. But I was thoroughly impressed. I was thoroughly impressed with the Meadow Creek. I don't think you'd go wrong with something like that.
It's funny. I've been going to barbecue contests as a spectator, and then started trying to get involved more this year as judging and actually competing. But I started going to these back in 2008, and my wife never really got into it until this year. She went to one. It was the one here in Knoxville, the Rocky Top Barbecue Cook-Off.
Yep.
And Chris Lilly came up, and Ken, and we ended up hanging out with them the whole time. And you know, Chris actually started showing Alexis how to build his boxes and all that kind of stuff, and the bug got her. You know, she the barbecue bug, after all these years, it finally got her. She's like, oh, wait, this competition stuff is fun. So now I feel like I have a little bit more freedom that I've got her on the side of doing it, and not a lot of guys have to sit there and, you know, come on, I got to spend this money or I spend that money, and the wife gets mad. Now she's behind it now. So I have to say thanks to Chris for that.
Dude, that's awesome, and she got to see a real genius at work when it comes to, you know,
exactly.
a guy like him.
Yeah, instead of hacks like us, you know. But, it really got her, and, you know, having her get to talk to Don about, you know, how the, you know, their history and everything, it's a fun sport to be involved in, and it just amazes me that it takes some people so long to get bit by it once, you know, if you've been to a contest.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, I mean, it's not just the – I mean, the thing that I think bites the majority of people is just the daggum camaraderie. You know, I mean, it's so – I mean, we meet such great people, and it's almost like having a whole second family.
It's true. It's a barbecue family. You know, Diva Q had – when her show first started coming out a couple weeks ago, finally in America – that first show, she said something about, I belong to a bigger family, the barbecue family. I'm like, yep, that says it right there. And now you guys help others out. You know, guy wrecks his rig on the way to a contest, and he gets there, and all of a sudden he's got all the meat and a cooker to borrow and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, everyone had pitched in for him. You know, that just, Operation Barbecue Release.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere you look in the world of barbecue, you just see good people.
No, absolutely. And I got to say, I mean, I even, you know, I mean, being off the show for 3 weeks, I kind of miss it because I get used to, you know, the usual suspects are going to be in chat, and I'm going to go over to Ripley's room and see you guys over there. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of, you just kind of get used to it. It's a whole other set of friends and family. So I think it's awesome.
And we all speak the same language, so we understand each other.
Yeah, exactly.
All, you know, if you say reverse flow offset, people are like, is that a type of football play?
Is that right behind the belly option? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is too funny. So how many contests are you trying to cook a year, Chris?
Well, this is my first year doing any. I got to hook up with Robin Lindars over at, she got me on Team Two Sauce Support with her and her dad, and it was a big crew. So I got to do my first Memphis-style one, and that was really an eye-opening experience. Every contest I've ever been to has been pretty much KCBS. So seeing that and getting to, you know, participate in it, and then when the judges come by, you know, seeing all that, that was quite a different experience. And I would actually wouldn't mind doing one of those one day down the road, or maybe doing something like the one of the dual contests where they do both KCBS and NBN style. So,
I've always wanted to go up to Murfreesboro and do that one that Amy and Mike Mills put on.
Oh yeah, that would
that dual contest.
That's awesome. But right now, Yeah, I want to do. I want to try to get one in doing by myself because everyone I've done has been with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So Eddie Medlin and I have been talking about getting together and trying to get one in this year, and then doing something really crazy like going to the American Royal Open, you know, one of those just crazy big, you know, crapshoots.
Man,
I'll
tell you what, man, you guys are going to go big right off the bat. You've helped out at Memphis in May, and then you want your first your team wanted to be the Royal Open, man. You ain't scared to jump in feet first.
Well, I mean, I've been around it long enough. I mean, you know, you got to do it or get off the pot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that'll definitely be it. And the Royal's just something to experience as a cooker anyway. You know, I mean, you got to do it.
After doing Memphis and May, I know that I have to do the Royal. I got to do Houston. You know, I can't believe I haven't done the Jack with it being as close to us in Knoxville as it is. You know, where it's only a couple hours from us.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I can't do it, but I could. I mean, I guess if I won a state championship, that's far off. But, I mean, I got to at least get over there and experience that one.
No, most definitely. I've never been. We've been in the draw a couple of times and never got drawn.
Right.
But I did go for the draw one year, and that in itself was pretty cool, especially if you know a lot of the cook teams and this and that.
Right.
It's a lot of fun to actually be there and see the bungs getting pulled out, and the whole process is pretty cool.
Right. And those kind of contests are like the Super Bowl of barbecue. I mean, everybody who's anybody's there, and you're going to see so many friends that you haven't seen, you know, all in the same place at one time. It's almost like a high school reunion or something like that, you know, family reunion.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I mean, it is. I mean, you get to see people from all over, and then, you know, Phil Rizzardi always, you know, has everybody from the Brethren over one night, so I know that's the first place I ever met Neil Strotter, was at the Royal. You know, we went back and forth on the Brethren, and then to run into him out there, and no, it's definitely one of those things, you got to do it. So I wish you guys all the best of luck going out there this year if you can.
Yeah, we'll appreciate it.
So tell me a little bit about this trip to the Myers, Ranch. That when you were talking to me about that just sounded totally awesome.
Yeah, it was you know, an opportunity that, again, that came straight from my blog. They contacted me and said, hey, we've got a trip we're setting up, and everybody else on there was like industry trade magazines and things like that. Clint Cantwell from grilling.com, the editor for there, was also there. We flew out. It's out in the middle of nowhere. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Northeast Florida, and, you know, had barely ever been, you know, across the Mississippi except to go to California a few times. So I didn't know what to expect, but it's out in Montana, out in the Blackfoot Valley, a very historic place. You know, a lot of things went down out there in our history. But it's beautiful. They had, you know, snow-capped mountains in the distance. I was expecting flat, you know, Texas flat plainlands.
Mm-hmm.
But beautiful, beautiful area, and the people there are just really, I mean, all about doing the right thing. I am not one. If you follow my blog, you don't see grass-fed organic and all that stuff. I don't follow that kind of trend too much. I don't really care for grass-fed beef. I'm more of a grain-fed beef guy.
I am too.
So it's kind of, but at the same time, I want humanely treated food. You know, I don't want cows that were crammed into stalls and, you know, basically lived a miserable life. And, you know, a lot of people are jumping on that organic green bandwagon. And the funny thing is, these people aren't using the buzzwords, but they're doing it in practice, and they have been since like the early 1990s when Bud Meyer bought the place, or Bob Meyer, excuse me, bought the place. He bought the ranch from a family that had, you know, been in their generations since like 1879, you know, right after the Civil War. And he started off about doing it right. It's not just about the cows. They remediated the land so that you know, to help wildlife. When they got there, basically all the wildlife had been run off because of overgrazing, and now they have like herds of over 1,000 elk. They've got wolves and things like that. So, I mean, it's not just about the cows, but, you know, obviously it is. But they've really grown a lot, and what they do is this ranch is basically kind of like their lab. Everything they do here develops their policies and practices for all of the co-op farms and ranchers that they use to supply their beef. And the interesting thing I learned is everybody's familiar with CAB. You see certified Angus beef at every grocery store or whatever. And I'd heard a few years ago, remember Dave Bosco's famous rant about CAB, and that's the first time I ever knew, okay, there's a problem with it, not a problem with it, but it's not what it, appears. And the difference between what CAB does and what they do, CAB, from what I understand, it's basically if a cow is 51% black, they consider it Angus. So it's kind of like, it looks like Angus to me. Even if it has other breeds and stuff. And here, they're actually using genetics. They're part of the registered, I hope I get their name right, National Red Angus Association. And that organization actually comes out and does audits, and it's all genetically tracked instead of just typing. So it's very, they can tell you, where the cow came from. They have meticulous records of each calf. I was very impressed. When you think of ranchers on TV or in the movies, it's always this wise old guy just leaning against the fence, doling out wisdom, but these guys work hard, and they have so many jobs. They wear so many hats, and they really, from the bottom rancher I met to all the way up to the top guy, they love what they're doing.
Yep.
It's a true love of their job.
Absolutely, it's their job, but it's really their lifestyle. That's what they love to do. It's amazing. And the other thing a lot of people don't understand is how intelligent some of those guys are. I guarantee that top rancher.
These guys are.
Smart. Yeah, and these guys their understanding of animal science is just unreal.
It's funny though you say that, and his the guy that runs his ranch, Jim, he's been with Bob before he ever bought the ranch. He's a real interesting guy, very big, quiet, silent type. But he actually worked with Bob doing gold drilling for gold before this.
Wow.
Story. I used to dig for gold. Now I'm running a ranch. But he said, when we first got here, everybody thought we were idiots. He said we did everything wrong and learned the hard way. But, they started off with one, it's funny, they had one blind as a bat, but very good genetic red Angus bull. And, they've experimented and, reached out, did artificial insemination programs to deepen their stock to where they are now. And, they've learned a lot. And that's one of the things that's cool about them being so in tune with nature there and trying to bring all the nature back. They noticed that the elks all calved in May and June. But, the cattle around there, they're all being calved in February and March. So they adjusted their calving times to match what the elk were doing, and they had better, they have a rating. I can't think of what it's called. It's like expected progeny or something like that. But anyway, they found that matching what nature does works better. And that's their approach, is trying to take the natural way. They don't do hormones. If they administer antibiotics, that cow has to come out of their stock, and they'll sell them off to someone that's not all natural.
Right.
Like if there's a cow that has an injury, so we're not going to let it die. We're not going to sit there and get an infection and, just be miserable, but they would treat it, and then it has to come out of the program altogether and go off for harvest to some other group. So, we actually, it's a working ranch, and they put us to work. I was actually giving cows their annual vaccine. They don't give them hormones, but they do an annual vaccine that a veterinarian prescribes each year. It changes, depending on what the threats are. And that was kind of the interesting thing, because I asked them, I said, what are the biggest threats to the cattle industry? Everybody's seeing the prices going up and going up. What is it? What are the threats? And I'm thinking they're going to say, wolves and mountain lions, because they're all over the place up there. And they said, no, the biggest threats are fires and droughts. And so that is the biggest threat to our cattle industry, because it drives up, for most farmers, it drives up their own prices here. They grow their own grass. They thin it, feed the calf out the natural grasses from that area, you know, alfalfa and things like that, and then finish them off on grain. So they don't use go ahead.
No, and I was going to say, and I like that program. I mean, I've cooked Meyer's briskets now for probably 2 years. And I'll tell you what, those things with 30 to 45 days age on them, man, you get the right size when it'll give a Wagyu a run for its money all day long.
Right. Yeah, the only downside I found, and I told them this, they market a lot to restaurants, and they do a lot of third-party branding. And, you know, I basically had to ask, it's like, well, what grocery stores can you tell me right now are doing their third-party branding? And they told me, you know, places like Earth Fair, Publix,
yeah.
And it's only their GreenWise line, I think.
Yeah,
but, So that seems kind of weird that, they don't take advantage more of the Meyer name, but maybe that'll change down the road. But, yeah, I definitely agree with the end result. You know, it's a naturally raised, animal that's been raised the right way. And I'll tell you, the executive chef told us the first time he ever made a prime rib. He had already been hired by Mr. Meyer personally. He said, I made him a prime rib and I overcooked it because the natural hormone-free cattle has less moisture, and he said, I didn't allow for that, and then sure enough, the first steak I cooked that way, overcooked it, it came out medium instead of medium rare, so he even warned me, and I still did it. the neat thing he said about, for people to try, go get yourself a 13-ounce hormone-treated steak, and then a 12-ounce naturally raised steak from a steer, and cook them together. He said they'll be the same weight at the finish.
Hmm.
Because of the hormone fed has so much more moisture loss going to it because it was it raised faster, the muscles grow faster, and just not in the way nature intended. So. The tagline they kept giving for what they do is just called they call it high pressure, low stress. You know, they don't use cattle prods, they don't use dogs to drive the cattle. They said cattle should be led and not driven. And we got to watch them like 5 a.m. We were up watching the ranch hands bring up 80 head of cattle. They do these little whistles and calls and things like that, and on horseback just guide them to where they're going. And have you ever heard of Dr. Temple Grandin?
No.
He's a real big livestock person from Colorado State University. They use pens designed by him. There was a movie about him a while back. But anyway, they follow a lot of his techniques. But it's just, very that what they like to say is their cows only have, their steer only have one bad day.
And it's the last one.
And it's a bad one. Yeah, it's a bad one. So, I have to say, I eat a lot of beef and I will never turn vegetarian, but when you're sitting there watching these mother cows, when we did it the day we were there and separated them and did the vaccinations and they turned the baby bulls into steers. While all that was going on, you see these mothers and the babies trying to get with each other and, they want to protect each other. It kind of makes you feel bad, and you're thinking, I eat these things. So, you got to take responsibility. If we're going to eat them, we might as well treat them well and raise them right and let them at least have a good life,
It's I kind of agree with you. I mean, I came from I did a lot of purchasing of proteins when I worked for Publix ages ago. So I went to a lot of ranches, a lot of slaughterhouses, and And you're right. It can make you have second thoughts because it can be a pretty brutal process. I mean, I remember I went to probably the only slaughterhouse I would say I went to where I'd eat off the floor, and that was Jimmy Dean. And
oh yeah,
they make their sausages. It's a whole hog sausage, and they say, hey man, we sell everything but the oink. It's got some use. I mean, even like the aortas off the heart of the hog are used for some medical procedure. It was very interesting how much of the animal they harvest for some type of use.
Right. Well, it was certainly an eye-opening experience for me because I got to see, you know, the difference with naturally raised, and now, I mean, it's worth the extra money for me, and not just knowing that it was done that way, but, you know, honestly, I get a little bit beefier taste, I think, and also the tenderness. It definitely seems to be a little bit more tender to me. We've really enjoyed using it since I've gotten back from there. I go seek it out. I had my grocery store that I always went to, but now I'm going to Publix just because that's where I can get the green wife stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm fortunate. My meat sponsor is actually the Florida food service distributor for Meijer's. So I love that. I every time we have a prime rib, you know, it's always a Meijer's prime rib. And I've even he's even brought in some of their dry age stuff for me because I just wanted to try it because they've got their whole, you know, own dry aging program. And, man, that stuff is phenomenal.
Yeah, we got to enjoy that while we were there. Chef John did like a carpaccio with a 28-day tenderloin. He did a prime rib that was 32. They made a bunch of sliders with aged beef. I mean, everything we ate was aged. It was really good stuff.
Well, you're
kind
telling
of stuff
me
I need to get all the time.
They worked you hard, but it sounded like they fed you pretty well, too.
Oh, yeah. The first day we were there, the Chef John said, yeah, I'm just doing an easy cowboy dinner tonight. He threw a whole ribeye in and cooked the prime rib for us. And that was their idea of a cowboy dinner. I was like, I think a cowboy dinner was going to be pinto beans around the fire, you know, the old Blazing Saddles scene.
Yeah, exactly. Just a whole bunch of stuff in a Dutch oven and, you know, you kind of get your own bowl in there and get what you can.
You get what the spoon grabs, exactly. So, yeah, if you ever get the opportunity, you definitely want to check that ranch out. They do not do a lot of visitors. In fact, they said we were one of their first groups ever, and it was more kind of just a trial run, and very educational to see, especially to see the buildings they restored. You know, these buildings are over 100 years old, and they've restored them, you know, as is. Just a real neat experience.
No, I mean, and that's what's cool. I mean, these people are, you know, obviously it's a for-profit business, but, you know, at the same time, they're taking care. You know, they've brought something good to the community. You know, they've restored these old landmarks. They've really taken the land and increased the utility of it. I mean that's just the right way to do business.
Right, they're being good stewards with what they have. You know, any corporation can go in and slam, you know, 1,000 cows per 100 acres. But, they have 40,000 acres, and the cow, they rotate, you know, they do proper rotation of the land to make sure, they do what's called sand hill rotation, which means every 7 days they're moving the cows to different pastures. They never commingle the groups. I mean, it's very scientific what they do. It's taken 20 years for them to get there and figure it out, but by God, they did it, I'll tell you that.
Wow, that is a... That is really cool. I mean, I actually have enjoyed this because it gives me I've always enjoyed the meat. You know, I've read their website and this and that, but to be able to hear your firsthand account of actually being there, that's absolutely amazing. That's really, really cool.
Well, I'm glad I got to share it with you because I sure enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. How long were you guys out there?
We were out there for a total of 3 days, but it was only one full day of the working. We arrived there midday on a Tuesday, worked the full day Wednesday, and then headed out Thursday evening.
Well, that's cool, but it sounds like you guys had some busy days. It sounds like you pressed a lot in there.
Oh, yeah. It was much different than the pig farm I had to see last year. The pig farm, it was your typical, stalls and, slam them in and let's get as many out as we can. And that organization actually won they've already done a lot of good things too, but here you get to see the cows are in their natural environment, which that's, you know, a lot better than seeing a bunch of pigs in gestation stalls.
I toured the Smithfield Tar Heel plant. And when I went there, that was ages ago, they were running 10,000 head a day through slaughter. Like you said, I had a lot of respect for the Jimmy Dean process, for the Smithfield process. It was definitely just one of those slam them through, get the numbers, and keep on trucking. You know what I'm saying? I haven't used or ate their pork in a long time, though. To me, you know, they had that big push 10 or 12 years ago with the Lean Generation program. And,
right.
You know, and don't get me wrong. I mean, when I was at Publix, I mean, we were heavily invested in that with them. And It just fell on its face. You know, you come to find out when people want to eat pork, they want something that tastes like pork. Yeah.
We don't want chicken.
And people don't understand to really start breeding an animal like that. I mean, you can't just say, well, let's take the Lean Generation sticker off. I mean, it takes years to get that breeding stock back to, you know, what it needs to be. It just doesn't happen overnight. So.
Exactly. And cows, it takes even longer because you have the longer turnaround times and stuff.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
Pigs, they're out in, 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days?
Yep. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And cows, it's a much longer period. So that was the interesting thing, seeing how that takes a lot longer. I think you're seeing a positive trend in the meat industry, but I wonder how many people are doing it like Meijer and doing it right. And how many of you are just doing it for a label or, being able to slap something on there and say it is.
Right. Yeah. You know, you got those guys that are truly want to do the right thing, but then you have the other guys that are saying they're reading those regulations as close as they can just to see if they can slide in, you know.
Manipulate every rule to the maximum you can. And, yeah, unfortunately, that's the case in a lot of them. But, and, you know, I think we're all, you know, all seeing about the prices and stuff of meat and, you know, pork and beef. I can tell you it's not going to the ranchers. I don't know where it's going, but it's out of my pocket and somebody else's, but it's not making ranchers rich. You can tell from the area there. I'd say ranchers are all land rich and money poor.
Yes, I would agree with you. I think that that about hits it on the head. I agree with you. And I've always felt like, you know, being in the grocery business and understanding the margins there. I mean, obviously, when you're, because that's where the money's made in a grocery store. You know, a can of beans is only marked up about 10-12%. It's all your perishable products that carry the load. And I can tell you right now, the distributor's not making the money. I know one pretty well, and I know the margins they operate on, and they literally, you know, get paid like they're just providing a service, you know.
Yeah. Well, I told the Meijer people. I told them they got to find a good barbecue team to sponsor.
No, we never thought about
that.
Yeah. No kidding. They because to me, I mean, it makes sense from a point of view of not just go out there and cook with their beef like we've done for the last 2 years, but to go out there and you know, on Friday night, do some steaks, do a tenderloin, let people taste the difference in the product, because it's there.
Oh yeah, it is.
So very well. If they're taking any suggestions from you, Chris, on that, tell them we're already using their stuff. We'd love to talk to them.
Yeah, I'll hook them up to your name.
So talking about going in and cooking your first contest, it's an interesting spot to get to talk to you about it. Is what do you feel like going in is your strongest category and your weakest category?
Going in, I'd have to say pork is probably going to be my best category. I would have said chicken was my worst, but
okay.
It's actually I've been practicing it a good bit at home and gotten to where I shave the back of the skin and do all that. I've got a couple of recipes, and I've got one cherry chipotle sauce that I'm really liking that has a real good flavor profile. So I think my chicken's come up. I'm thinking now probably my most unpredictable, believe it or not, would actually be ribs. I'm more comfortable with brisket even than ribs right now.
Really? Are you cooking?
I don't know if I've just been really lucky with brisket lately.
Are you cooking babies or St. Louis?
St. Louis. I prefer St. Louis.
Really?
At Memphis and May, Memphis and May, we did baby backs, and we were miserable. I think we did 47th. 47th out of like what 120, 118, I think.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm just more comfortable doing the spares. But as far as my most, if I was going to do bad, I would probably think it would come in ribs.
Okay. And most confident in pork. What's the pork confidence from? Just you've cooked a lot of it. You feel good about it. Then you got to get the
I've just cooked a lot of it and enjoy it, and have a couple of different decent recipes that I like with it and have practiced. So, yeah, I'm just I guess I'm just more confident with it just from familiarity more than anything.
Well, man, there's nothing wrong with that at all. So looks like we will keep being. Do we have a team name yet, Chris?
Well, yeah, I talked to Neil Gallagher just about being Team Too Soft to Pork, you know, from the Memphis MMA group we are with. They do have a KCBS team, so you know, he said I could do it as long as, you know, we just have to coordinate that I'm not doing it on the day someone else is. So I think I'm just going to stay with them, actually, and just do it under that brand.
Hey, that works. So you and Eddie are going to do it? You taking the big green egg out there, or are you hoping to have a pit by then?
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a pit by then. He's in South Carolina, so we got to coordinate a contest, and he got pretty sick there right after Memphis MMA. He came back with bronchitis and the flu and stuff. But I got to get back in touch with him. He and I talked a couple weeks ago, and go ahead and pick our the first one we're going to do and go from there.
Excellent. That sounds great, man. I wish you guys all the best of luck. Anybody else you want to hit on the way out? I mean, obviously. Everybody knows they can go find you over at nibblemethis.com. Anybody else sponsor-wise or any thanks?
No, I think we covered them all pretty much. Johnsonville, Kingsford, Craycourt, they're all good people.
Awesome, man. Well, Chris, thanks so much for the time. It was great having you on the show. I loved recounting that visit to Meyer, and maybe we'll ring you back up after that first contest and see how the first one treated you.
Sounds like a deal. All right. See
Excellent,
you
man. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, guys, Chris Grobe, nibblemethis.com. Great blog, great recipes, great guy. Really enjoyed getting to recap that trip with him, that Myers beef trip. That I've said it before. I mean, we've cooked with their stuff for a while, and it's really, really high-quality product. And if you get a chance, get yourself some. If you're down here in the Southeast, you can pick it up. Any of the Greenwise Publix products are all Myers beef. And then they actually have a store locator that I was looking at on the website while Chris and I were talking. It looks like they carry it under the Myers brand at Super Target. I don't know what cuts they have or whatever the case. I don't do a lot of Super Target shopping, but it looks like you can also pick it up there. All right, talking about picking up good items before we get over to Rob Bagby. BarbecueSuperstore.com. These guys over there, Rich, Mark, we talk about them all the time. Actually going to give out a $10 gift card tonight, maybe, if I got time. It'll be some question I'll ask you, and if you call in and get it, we'll get you a $10 gift card. But you got to go over there and check them out. They carry all the great products that I know we love to use, Texas pepper jelly. They've got the rib candy. They've got all the Cosmos products. Whatever you want from a barbecue point of view, they've usually got it over there, the Meat Mitch stuff. Rubs, out like crazy. I just love having that one-stop shop, that one place I can go to. Actually going to be doing it here probably this week. Get on there because, you know, we've had a little bit of time off, and I want to get some fresh rubs, some fresh sauces, and I'm just going to go over there to thebarbecuesuperstore.com, get loaded up. It's usually going to ship next day. Plenty of shipping options. It's going to get to your doorstep. It's going to be packaged correctly. Nothing broken, any of that kind of stuff. First-class guys selling you first-class products. TheBBQSuperstore.com. Let's pull up my good friend, Rob Bagby. Maybe. Rob, what's up?
Bonjour, Pierre.
Yes, sir, man. It is good to be back where you understand what people are saying about you.
Well, I know how you feel. I bet, how long were you over there?
It was a quick trip. I was over on Tuesday, and I came back on Sunday. It was a little bit longer than I expected from the point of view of getting there. It was a 24-hour experience for a 12-hour flight.
Holy smokes.
Oh, yeah, dude. It was one of those where, you know, I, like, my flight was at 7, I showed up at 5, and right off the bat, boom, you're delayed till 9. I was going from Boston to Amsterdam, and then Amsterdam down to Marseille. And so 9 turns into like 10:30, we get on the plane, we taxi out, and the pilot gets on and goes, guys, I've been flying for 20 years, and I've only had to do this 2 or 3 times, but we got to go back to the gate. The cargo's not correctly positioned on the plane for weight distribution. So we go back, and you hear him slinging all kinds of shit down around the bottom of it. And then we go to back out of the gate, and there's a warning light. So long story short, 1:45, we leave. And obviously at that point, I've blown through my connection. So then I got to wait in Amsterdam for 3 hours for the next flight. It was a mess. Believe me, when I got, you could have been shipped me to Africa. I just wanted somewhere to sleep. But yeah, it wasn't a bad trip at all. We ate pretty well, which is always a good thing over there. I mean, those guys, they may not be much on some things, but they definitely know how to cook.
I bet. Boy, that'd be good eating anyway.
Absolutely. So,
did you find anything to keep yourself busy in Amsterdam for 3 hours?
Man, I could have, but then I was worried about getting back through security and this and that, so I just stayed put. But I'm sure if it would have been a planned 4 or 5 hour layover, I definitely think we could have found a thing or two to pass the time a little bit quicker than just airport watching.
No doubt about it. Well, I'm glad you're back.
Absolutely, man. Great to be back. And so, since the last time we talked, you've had some big news, man. You got that win on the first on your first, I guess, episode of Barbecue Pitmasters. I kind of want to talk through that whole process, as much of it as you can tell us, because
sure.
I think it's interesting having gone through a casting process for another show. It's always unique to hear each person's process. So for this year, now, had you guys turned in video before, Rob?
We turned in probably 4 years ago, and
okay.
We used one of the school video cameras, and it was so ancient. I don't think they had any way to play the little tape we sent in. We didn't turn it in online. We actually sent them a little tape, and I don't even remember what the format was. But it was back when I had my broken ankle, and it was as campy as the one we just did. But yeah, so we did turn in one earlier, but it didn't put a whole lot of effort into it.
So this one this year, obviously you get it online, you do all that stuff. I mean, what were you trying to do with the video? Just kind of sell who you guys were? And I mean, obviously, I mean, a guy like you, I mean, from a skills point of view, I mean, all you got to do is turn over your resume, 40-something grands and, world championship and pork at the Jack, that kind of stuff. So you knew you had that part beat. They're not going to sit there and go, well, are we afraid to put this guy on TV because he can cook? Yeah, I think he's got that part figured out. So, I mean, when you're doing the video, are you kind of thinking this is a personality contest and kind of trying to sell yourself on that fit?
Yeah, we were kind of looking at it that way. And, me, I'm not the most outgoing, gregarious kind of guy, in a normal situation. So it was kind of a challenge for me. But we gave my daughter, Jenna, my iPad. I think it was on the iPad. And she just followed us around. And Barbecue Pitmasters had given or laid out an outline of things they wanted you to cover in the video. And so we just kind of, I don't want to say rehearsed it, but we knew what we were going to hit and what we were going to do. And, between you and me and the mazillion people listening, it was terrible. It was the most corny, dumbest video ever. It was embarrassing. Oh, it was terrible.
But it worked.
Kid Rock's song, I don't know how you pronounce the name, Ba to the Ba Ba.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that starts off real slow and with the music, and it grows and grows. So I came up with this great idea of Amy and I will be up inside my trailer with the door down, the big open door, the big side door, and I'm holding on to it. and I'm blasting that off real slow, and then as it starts to, the music grows, I let it open, and the door flies open, and there we are, and it was so stupid. And I try to stop the music, and I pull a cord out, and it hits some metal, and you hear this. It was the dumbest thing. It's a wonder they got through it.
That's too funny. But sometimes that's one of the best qualities about, you know, that casting folks are looking for, is the ability to be able to laugh at yourself.
Yeah, I was good at that.
So obviously there was something there that they liked, and so you send it in, and you know, what did you have, a couple, did you have a couple of weeks you waited, or was it something, you hear something pretty quick?
You know, it wasn't too long. It was within a month, I believe. I'm terrible with dates, but we got I can't remember what the week was or whatever, but got a phone call in the evening, and it reminded me of the phone call I got from Brazil that I thought was a prank, you know, one of you guys or whoever pulling a prank. And the guy goes, "Is this Rob Bagby with Swamp Boys?" And I said, you know, whenever I hear that, I'm kind of leery, like, I'm not going to be taken for a joke. I'm not going to get punked. You know, yeah. And he goes, "Would you like to be on Pitmasters?" And I'm still not believing it. I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. And he goes, "Really? You know, are you excited about it?" And I don't want to get excited because I think it's you or whoever else.
JW or somebody, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm playing it cool. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be all right. And stuff like that. And he goes, "Well, seriously, I want to, you know, we want you to do this. We saw your video." And now I'm starting to believe him. I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds cool. And he says, "Well, I'll call you back tomorrow," and all this other stuff, and send you an email, and you're on. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I go to tell my wife, and I said, "Well, I got this phone call, but I really still don't know if I believe it's true or not." And I told her, and she wasn't sure either. So it took about a week probably before we both bought into the idea of, yeah, they did want us. Because, you know, we're thinking in the back of our mind that video we sent in, and it's like, there's no way anybody's going to want us from that. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh. I love the fact you're just playing it too cool, like, yeah, that'd be cool. All right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll still see if I'm busy that weekend.
No, that is that's too funny. And I'll tell you what, that's a pretty painless process then. So you got that phone call, and I'm sure what followed after was, you know, here's the weekends, you know, here's the weekend we're looking for, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that's actually not too terribly painful then.
No, not at all. They sent out, and you know, they don't let you, like, if when they do emails, it's not addressed to a bunch of teams. So you don't know who's on it. You're part of a blind carbon copy. And, you know, they say, we're still in the process of contacting teams, so we don't want you to say anything publicly about it yet. And you need to be available for these weekends, and they list about six or eight of them. And one of them was scheduled for I already had a Q school set up with Three Eyes, so, you know,
yep.
I had to tell them right off the bat. I said, I absolutely can't do that one. I hope, you know, at that point they still hadn't scheduled who was going to go when and where and all that stuff. So they worked around that, and the rest just kind of fell into place. It was really cool.
Well, and then, I mean, the venue, I mean, by far, you've got to cook what I would say is the coolest venue, and just the whole Dale Jr. thing. I mean, you know, all the other ones, that really the venue hasn't mattered. It's just been some contest somewhere. You know what I'm saying? But
right.
But I think you really scored with that, being able to be part of that and get to see Martinsville and you know, shit, go down to the pits. I mean, that just had to be pretty kick ass.
Oh man, it was so cool. And you know, you probably know too, I'm just gonna play as ignorant as I can, but on the contract you sign, there's some stuff you're not supposed to talk about, their process and stuff like that.
Yep.
But I don't, you know, I'll tell you stuff. I don't think it's going to really matter that much. But we were originally scheduled to go out to where Lene and Lulu's and Danny Kugel cooked.
Oh, okay.
Out there in the way out there. And they didn't tell us until 2 weeks or less ahead of time that we had been moved and everything had changed, and now we're going to Martinsville. And so, you know, the first thing I do is I get on the internet and I look at the date and I look at Martinsville on KCBS, and there's no contest in Martinsville.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, what the heck, you know, what's going on out in Martinsville? And then it kind of rang a bell in my head about the race. And so I pulled up the NASCAR.com or whatever it is and saw that there was a race that weekend. And it's like, oh, yeah, this sounds pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, if you had to get a last-minute change, I mean, it couldn't have played in your favor much better.
Yeah.
That and the fact that you got ribs, a friggin' rib king, and you had to be just elated when you saw that.
You know, yeah, the rib part was pretty exciting. And I'll tell you one thing, you know, you're given a list of possibilities that you might be cooking, and it's probably 30 to 35 different items. And, you know, I made it a point to go through and try and study as much of that as I could and, you know, come up with finish temps and stuff like that. You know, the flavors and the seasonings I wasn't too concerned about, but, you know, like I didn't want to make a mistake and take a rack of lamb to a 200 degrees and try to pull it or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, so I wanted to get those basics down. So, you know, I kind of felt like I had been cramming for a test. And then we get there and I see, you know, baby back ribs. It's like, man, I didn't need to study for this. But, yeah, that was really cool. That took a big load off my mind when I saw those.
Yeah, and you know, to me, that's cool. I didn't know that they gave you a list of 30, 35 things. I mean, that actually kind of, you know, helps calm your nerves a little bit. Because like you said, I mean, you at least brush up on them and know, you know, time, temperature, and pull temp. I mean, if you at least have that, you know, you can kind of, you know, work with everything else, you know, flavor profiles and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then turkey, I thought, you know, turkey's another one where, you know, I mean, being barbecue guys, I mean, we smoke turkey at least twice a year.
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, that's about it, is twice a year at the most.
Yeah, yeah, whereas we're cooking butts and brisket, you know, 50 times a year.
Right,
you know,
right.
So when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, you're not cooking a whole hell of a lot of it. I mean, no one ever says, you know what, I really feel like doing a nice turkey this weekend. At least
no.
I don't, you know?
No, I don't either. Yeah, I saw that. And again, you know, I'm trying to remember how it all shook out, but I think in one of the contracts we signed was the list of possibilities, and then you had to mail it back to them once you signed it and everything, and dumb me, I didn't think to make, you know, notes from it or anything. So I sent it back, and it's like, oh, man, I just sent back the list of stuff we had. So I was trying to remember all the stuff. But, yeah, so I see the ribs, and that was cool, and then I see the turkey, and it's like, oh, gosh. You know, again, here I'm all ready for some big, badass primal cut of meat.
Yeah.
And a freaking turkey.
Yeah,
but,
you're like making like a whole half of beef in there, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but that being said, you know, those two were pretty easy things, and in the big scheme of things, I'm super happy we got those after it all shook out.
I was hoping you would get shoulder clawed, because ever since you've turned me onto that for pulled beef.
Right.
Man, that's phenomenal.
Isn't that good stuff? That's one of the secrets of barbecue, I think. That's
yeah.
How many people use it.
No, it was, you know, I've done it a couple times. I think you turned Jared onto it, and then Jared was telling me about it, and I was like, shit, I got to try one of those. And man, that's one of the few barbecue foods. I like to keep some of that in the fridge for the next 2 or 3 days. It's, I mean, you can do quesadillas with it, sandwiches. I mean, it's damn good.
No doubt about it. And I actually take some of my red vinegar sauce that I like to use on pulled pork and put that on there, and that really kicks it up a couple notches.
Oh, I bet it does. I'll have to try that.
It's that's a good cut. Yeah, that would have been fun because I saw they just got shoulder cod.
Yeah.
Since.
Yep. Yeah, I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, what's the chance he got that? So you guys get there. So what do you plan on? Do you plan on a little 2-day drive to get up there?
What did we do? Yeah, we left. We left from work on Wednesday, and then we got up to about the Florida line somewhere around there, and stayed overnight. Then got up early about 6 o'clock on Thursday morning, and drove. Oh, what was it? 12, 13, 14 hours. Something like that. Probably 12 hours on Thursday. And we got in there. It was dark, or just getting dark when we pulled in. And it was snowing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. we knew there was a good chance it was going to be cold. So, we had the appropriate clothes. But, going from Florida to the snow for a barbecue event was kind of strange.
Rob, you said you had the proper clothes on. You wore shorts the whole episode.
Well, I had them with me. They had, and I'm sure you had the same thing. They're concerned about continuity with the show.
Yes.
So I knew it was going to be cold in the morning. You got to get there before dark, or while it's dark, before sunrise, because they film some from sunrise to sunset. And looking at the forecast for the day, it was going to warm up to just about 70 or low 70s. And I'm a really hot-blooded guy. I mean, I can't.
Yeah.
I hate wearing jeans. And
yep.
I'm miserable if I'm hot, overdressed with stuff. So I figured that I'd rather suffer it, tough it out in the morning with the cold and be comfortable the rest of the day than, be warm for a couple hours in the morning and then sweat my junk off the rest of the afternoon. So I just kind of bit the bullet. And they actually had, there was a funny part they didn't put in there. I didn't think they would, but we're standing up in front of the judges. And, let me think how it was said. I'm there in shorts and my little bony knees are knocking. And, what the heck was it? Oh, he said something like, Myron said to me, like they're filming, he goes, Rob, you look like a nut standing out there with no pants on or, with shorts on. I said, Myron, you ain't going to find any nuts up over here. It's too cold. it was funny stuff, but I guess it didn't make it on the show.
So did you know it was going to be Tommy and Whiskey Ranch before you got there?
Officially, no.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's so much talk and rumors and whatnot out there, but.
I remember a conversation where we were trying to pair off and figure out who we knew was paired up, who we didn't know was paired up. Yeah, it was pretty funny. But that's what happens when once everybody can go official and say I'm in, then you just start trying to back into who's going to be where and what and why. And all that kind of stuff. So do you have any background with either of the two? I mean, I'm sure you've probably ran into Tommy in a couple contests, haven't you?
Yeah, I've known Tommy for probably 7 or 8 years maybe. We didn't stay in close contact, but we'd always used to cook the one that just happened in South Carolina, Festival of Discovery.
Discovery,
up there in Greenwood, South Carolina. And he would always be up there cooking and vending and stuff. And, we'd chat at those times. And I'm sure I've seen him at other contests. So, we were familiar with each other. Jen and Tom from Arizona, we don't run into too many Arizona teams too often.
No.
So I had not met them.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I met them on the Trop set because they were both on it. And friggin', I thought Tom was going to have his hand cut off. He caught some damn horrible infection while we were there, but they were nice enough people, really nice folks.
Yeah, he was telling us about that. He said he, I think he said he thought it came from cleaning chicken or something, barehanded.
Yeah.
And he got some kind of something in him, and he said he wanted to keep on going, but the producers told him, "Nah, you're out," or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean, it looked pretty damn rough. I mean, I was like, "Damn, man, that is," because he was coming back from the hospital the day I was filming my promo stuff, and I was like, you know, it was almost cartoonish, like, you know, when you see like a hand swell up on a car, and you're like, "Holy crap, is that real?" Like, man, they got it. I didn't know we were gonna have to have graphic effects over here, but yeah, they were really nice folks. So that's so you got you a good group. I mean, that's the nice thing about it. I mean, if you're gonna be stuck there filming a show all weekend, you at least want to be around some folks that you know you can enjoy.
Oh yeah, we all went out to eat dinner together Friday night. Tommy took us out. Yeah, that's his hometown, and
yeah.
So we all went out to eat dinner Friday night and had a blast and. Just, you know, super nice, relaxed people for the most part.
So is it really all filmed on Saturday?
For the most part, yeah.
But you do like some B-roll stuff probably on Sunday or some interview stuff on Sunday?
Yeah. I don't want to get too much into that because some of that I probably shouldn't talk about. But
no worries.
Primarily Saturday, yeah.
Yeah,
cool. But there was a few extra things.
Good deal. So did you guys? So when did you guys find out about getting a chance to be in the pit box? Was that something they sprung on you Saturday morning?
We had a team meeting or whatever Friday, where they're kind of going over, you know, reading over contracts and rules and stuff like that and scenarios and they said you guys are in store for a pretty cool episode. You know, we think this can be one of the better episodes. You know, we're looking at it as a special episode. And then I forgot exactly when they told us, but at some, well, I guess it was Friday. They said you're going to have a special guest come on set and talk to you on Saturday. And we're like, oh, that's cool, you know. And we're thinking, okay, we're at a NASCAR race. It's got to be a driver or somebody, most likely. And then we get to the set, and you know they have the perimeter fence to keep the line for the public to keep them out. And we're looking at the perimeter fence, and they've got banners or netting or whatever it is they put up on it. And Diet Mountain Dew is on there, and we're all thinking to ourselves and talking a little bit, kind of whispering amongst ourselves. You know, I've not seen that Diet Mountain Dew, you know, with barbecue pitmasters before. That seems to be kind of new. And then kind of put two and two together, and we all at that point kind of figured out that it was going to, you know, we very well might be seeing Dale Earnhardt Jr. And when we just knew he was coming. We didn't know when. And he literally just walked around the corner like they showed. it was pretty cool, you know. Tommy's hooping and hollering, you know, because he and his son both race and race motorcycles and all kinds of stuff. So they're big into the racing. And, you know, I love racing. I don't know it as well as I could or should, but I definitely knew who he was. It felt pretty stupid when he came over and says, yeah, I want to be like you, just in barbecue. Oh man, that was corny and stupid.
That's all right, Rob. You're a little awestruck.
Yeah, I was. Well, you know, he was kind of quiet, and there was this awkward silence. And so I felt like, okay, I got to say something. I got to say, I want to be like you, Dale Jr.
I got to say something. If I'm going to say something, might as well kiss his ass.
Might as well. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll take me for a ride in the car.
There you go. There you go. Now, that's, like I said, I think that was just a really, really cool add-on aspect of the show. You know, one of the things when you get there and you get started, you know, one thing for people that maybe haven't seen your rig, that had to be a whole deal in itself, getting those two Yoders off the trailer, because, I mean, you've got those things usually, you know, permanently attached in there.
Yeah, that was a lot of work. You know, they told us ahead of time that, well, they... I had to send in so many pictures of my pits, and everybody did. They were looking apparently at one point early in the filming, not with us, but episodes prior. I guess people were showing up with sponsor stuff all over their pits, and it was causing headaches for them because, you know, they don't want to see anybody's logo unless it's your team logo or something like that.
Or, if they're getting
paid, you know, if it's a sponsor of the show.
Right.
And I totally understand that. So, we had to send in photographs from every angle possible. And then, like you said, mine are bolted down. So I had to go in and unbolt them and reinstall the wheels that they came with so we'd be able to roll them off. And that stick burner weighs about 1,300 pounds.
Yeah.
It's huge. And I just had some old wooden ramps and stuff. And it had been raining and snowing and stuff like that. There was no snow on the ground, but the ground was really wet.
Slick,
just muddy as could be. And I wish I would have taken a picture of it, but Tommy was the first one to load in. They have you load in a certain order. Tommy was the first one, and he got stuck every which way but loose, and his truck and his trailer were just covered in mud. And, he was in four-wheel drive, but it was just so slick. And with the pulling the trailer, that's just added weight. And he was a mess. But, we rolled off his Jambo and got all his stuff off. It wasn't too big of a problem. Then it was my turn. And everything came off pretty easy. You got the whole crew there who does the filming is helping unload stuff. So it all came off fairly easy, but then when I went to pull out, there was a hill, and I'm kind of crabbing along sideways on it, and I had to stop and wait for Tom and Deb or Jen to pull their truck in to load in next, and I'm sitting on the side of this hill, and all of a sudden I notice I'm moving. I'm not going forwards or backwards. I'm sliding sideways.
Sideways. Yeah.
I'm sliding right towards Tom's or Deb or Jennifer's beautiful Jambo. And I'm thinking, holy smokes, that's going to make a heck of a story if I crash into that. We started trying. I'm scrambling to try to move forward, and they're scrambling to try to get out of my way. It was good times.
That is too funny. But good thing is you got everything off, and there was no damage, but it was a little touch and go there for a minute, huh, Rob?
Oh yeah, it was kind of hairy, but once we got everything off, it was cool. It was cool.
Excellent. So you guys get there, obviously you find out, we kind of talked about the selection of the meats. How did you take the approach of obviously you've got the pellet and you've got the stick burner. Did you start them both out in the stick burner, or kind of what did you do there on your part on the ribs and the turkey?
I primarily used the stick burner. We had more meat than what you saw that we were allowed to cook, more pieces or whatever. I ended up cooking four turkeys, and I can't remember if I cooked extra ribs or I don't think I cooked extra ribs, just what you saw. But I had a few couple extra turkeys. And so I was, I had my primary ones I was doing on the stick burner. And then my secondary, just in case there was a problem, were on the pellet cooker. Because you're there all day, might as well go ahead and feed that fire. And so I was really babying the fire and getting all the sticks warmed up super hot on top and just had the beautiful clean fire going. So, the majority of everything was on the stick burner.
Gotcha. And beforehand, did you do any injection, brining, anything of that nature on the turkey?
Yep. We have you seen the show?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we did, when I'm at home and doing Thanksgiving stuff, I don't ever brine them.
Right.
But and they always come out pretty decent. Actually, I usually do them about like Tommy and Jennifer did. Tommy, anyway, with the Creole seasoning,
Yep.
Cajun butter stuff everybody gets at Thanksgiving.
Yep.
But I thought, well, I've got this brine, you know, because you come loaded for bear when you go up there because you have no idea what you're going to get. So I thought, you know, I got this brine. Might as well use it. So I went ahead and mixed that up and made sure I did it in my grizzly cooler and got all four of those in one shot.
Exactly.
And went ahead and did the brine, and happy I did. Worked out well.
No, that's great. The that, you know, and there's just something about. Were you the only one that brined? I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. On poultry, I became I would say it took some opening of my eyes up to it, but here over the last year and a half, I've really went to brining because, I mean, it to me, I just like the finished product when I do it that way instead of injecting or anything crazy like that, especially when you start dealing with some of the smaller pieces of chicken that we're more accustomed to, you know, competition-wise. I just feel like brining's a little bit more of a little more successful to me, at least, than the injection.
Yeah,
so,
I think I agree. It's taken me a while to get the hang of it.
Right.
Early on, I tried some brining chicken and stuff, and I just wasn't doing it right. And I would have super salty chicken, or just wasn't doing it right. So I finally started figuring it out, and I'm starting to like it.
Absolutely, very cool. And we got a question: do you call your brine swamp water? Great question, Rob. There you go. That's the first product line coming out from Rob Bagby. Swamp
well, I don't know if it'll,
water brine.
Yeah, you know we. it's funny because they didn't put stuff on there, or in the show that I said they were talking about. I can't remember if it was my brine or what, and they want you to list ingredients, and then I said, in the liquid, this isn't water. This is tears from a baby alligator that we swiped from its mama, or something like that. But we got those New York producers, and they're sitting there looking at me like, what really?
Yeah.
How do you get that? That's weird.
Don't worry. That's all the L.A. producers have looked at me in the past. It's like, where the hell? Somebody fire the guy in casting. Who the hell found this redneck? that's too funny, and that is always some of the when you finally, you know, because that's the thing about it. I mean, there's no pre-screening of the episode or anything like that. I mean, you're gonna sit there and watch it with the rest of the world and see, I've talked to some guys in the past that, it's hard to really tell the story. I can't tell the story yet. Never mind. But I've talked to some guys in the past that have had some issues with the way they've been edited. And then been on a future set with them and just relenting like, well, yeah, I'm sure I'm going to do this, but I'm sure you guys will cut it out because it actually shows me being a nice guy. And I'm damn, dude. You got some pent-up frustration there or what, kid? And but I mean, there always is that, you know, I know, like, for me on the chop thing, I mean, one, I knew I got beat, but two, I knew I cut myself in the first 5 seconds. I'm like, man, are they going to sit here and just really make what an asshole I am for – cutting myself, opening a bag, you know, but you know, it wasn't. You just kind of worry and start playing through your head. What ammunition did I give them to where? What's the most foolish I could look, and what's the best I could look, and hopefully we'll fall somewhere in between, you know?
Right, exactly. There's, there was another funny thing that we did, and I kind of did it on purpose. When they show us skinning the ribs, and I'm right-handed, so I'm pulling, the ribs are in front of me, and I'm using my right hand, I'm pulling from the left to my right, pulling it off the back of the rib, and my wife is standing right at my right shoulder, and you know, if you pull that skin back and it's kind of under tension, and then it gets to the very end, it kind of does like a towel pop, you know, if you're going to pop somebody, and so I kind of aimed it just right while I'm pulling it all slick and everything, and it kapow, and hit my wife right in the face. she played it off real good. You know, she didn't smack me or anything, but the guys didn't get it on film or something.
Oh, man.
To go for a take two.
Amy took all that abuse for nothing.
She did, but she was a trooper, man. She was awesome.
Well, that's something cool, too. I mean, to have your wife for so many years there with you. I mean, obviously, you feel some pressure. You're nervous. But, you know, one of the things to help, I mean, when you've got someone, you know, there like that, I mean, it has to have a real calming effect, you know?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And she and I are total opposites. You know, I'm kind of laid back and relaxed, and she's very type A and stressed. And another thing they didn't show, and the producers kept saying, oh, man, that was so funny when she did that. I think that's going to be great on the show. But they didn't put it in. We're getting to turn-in time, and, you know, it's a very definite time, but everything's under control. There's not a concern. But she's going, you know, she wants me to turn in at the beginning of the turn-in window. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Honey, there's no point in doing that. It's just going to sit there and get cold.
Yep.
So we're going to take it towards the end. And so it's getting towards the end. She goes, come on, you're making me nervous. You're making me nervous. You're making me nervous. And I said, honey, calm down. And she goes, okay, I'm calm. I didn't think it was that funny, but the producer just thought it was a hoot. And, yeah, that didn't make it on either.
Well,
now there
know,
is
I mean,
some stuff there's some stuff I said in the next episode that I really hope does not make it on. We'll talk about that later on. But I'm crossing my fingers and toes.
That is too funny. They got an air date on that yet? On the second one?
Mm-hmm. No, they haven't. But if they don't take a break and you know do any repeats, it should be about the second weekend of August.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not too far away then.
Right. And if they do a you know, a week of reruns, it should move it up a week or, you know, forward a week.
Right. Very, very cool. You going to have another throwdown there at the Bagby House for that one?
Well, we have to go to work that Monday. This past one, we didn't have to be at work on Monday because we're on
summer break.
Yeah,
that's right. It was summer. Yeah.
But this next one will be... I believe that's the first day of kids back at school.
I don't
want to go in with a headache or anything.
No, absolutely not. It looks like it was a great turnout, though. How many people did you guys have come watch?
Oh, gosh, we had, I didn't want to do an open party because, you know, I was afraid what might happen. So I just quietly invited about 50 friends. But some of those friends invited friends, and we had about 80 or 100.
Oh, wow, so, that is great, man.
Yeah, but... Yeah, you know, we only had one room to watch, and so we had about 80 people crammed in our living room. We were just laid up in there like sardines. It was a lot of fun, though.
Wood.
Yeah, I had a blast.
That is super cool. And I know, I think you looked great. You know, I saw the episode. You know, and I know you were kind of nervous about, you know, being on TV and kind of the first time, and you wanted to come off well, and I think you did a killer job with it. You know, and my word of advice, I think you did perfect. It was just a B3 beer Bagby. Just be that, you know, how you feel after that first beer or two where you start to loosen up a little bit, and I think you came off awesome, man. I think you did a great job. I can't wait to see the next one.
Well, thanks, man. And that was great advice you gave me. I mean, that was exactly what you said, B3 beer Bagby. You know, don't be the quiet guy, you know, who takes a couple hours to get warmed up. You don't have a couple hours to get warmed up.
Right.
So, the crew, the filming crew, encouraged you to drink.
Yo,
so
sure.
I didn't need a whole lot of encouragement, so I had Bloody Marys right off the bat and just kind of kept it, you know, not under wraps, but in control the whole time because 12 hours of drinking, you know, it's... That takes a lot of skill to pace yourself.
Exactly. But I mean, it's like I've told guys before. I mean, you know, yeah, you're going on TV and you're going to be on the show, but, you know, the style of cooking that we do, you're accustomed to drinking a cold beer or a Bloody Mary. I mean, that's how you do it at the office. You know what I mean? I mean, so
sure.
It's not out of character to, you know, whistle you down a shot of whiskey or have you a beer, you know?
Yeah, and they didn't really show this either, but both sides of me had jars of chine with them. And so we had a thing where, let me think a minute. Okay, no, it was a different one. But I had my Bells from Best of the Best, And so, you know, after we all got loosened up after the first hour, you know, of finding out the meats and stuff, and everybody kind of got things under control, I just randomly ring the bells, and we'd all go out front of the tents and meet and have a couple of shots of moonshine.
Mm.
And, you know, we probably did that about 10 times.
I kept everybody loose.
Yeah, yeah. We, you know, the crew, filming crew would come in and join us, and, you know, we had a blast. We really did have a lot of fun. Super
and, man, honestly, that's, I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, that's super cool. Afterwards, one of the things I noticed, did you guys actually take food to Dale Earnhardt's pit crew, or was that, like, provided by somebody else?
No, that was a little bit frustrating. They served the crew our ribs, but, you know, the filming was on Saturday, the race was on Sunday. So they actually, and I fussed at them about this, they took leftover ribs. And, you know, I said, golly, I wish I would have known you were going to take the ribs over to them. I would have happily gotten up and cooked them some fresh ribs this morning.
Fresh ribs, sure, yeah.
I mean, they had plenty of product on hand. But, yeah, because, you know, leftover ribs, and then they got reheated in the pellet cooker. And
they were dry as shit, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They were pretty worn out by the time they got to the crew. But I tell you, there was those guys. I mean, it seemed like they were on Survivor Island for 3 weeks. They inhaled them. you know how it is. A decent competition rib is better than 95% of any other rib that's out there at a restaurant. So
sure.
But
sure.
Yeah, still, it would have been nice to give them our best.
Yeah. I mean, you want to do that just because. I mean, anytime you serve people your food, you feel like that's your brand. You know, that's your name stamped on that bad boy. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that there was, I don't know if you got, there was real big, I shouldn't say real big, but pretty good size pit crew guy, and he was just going on and on. He wouldn't stop, and he wanted us to go on tour with them and be their barbecue cooks. And he was a pretty cool guy.
Sure, for the right price, I guess, arranged.
Yeah, sure. I'll go.
Now, did just you and Amy make the trip, or did you pack up the daughters too?
No, it's just the two of us.
Oh, that's amazing.
We did promise Jenna, our younger daughter, that if we won and got to go to the next one, wherever it might be, we would take her with us. So
cool.
She was good with that.
Very good, very good. So obviously we'll be looking forward to the next episode. You know, obviously we can't talk about that tonight, but I'm sure we'll have you back on to talk about it then. So if you don't mind, I'd like to change gears for a little bit and talk about the rest of the year. I know you just got done with another Q class. How many competitors that we got to worry about did you turn out last weekend?
I believe there's 21.
And that is great. You know, and Rob, that, you know, speaking of ass kissing earlier, I'll be one of the first ones to, what I'm about to do is that. but to you know, the nice thing about it is it's not like you've done one or two or three Q schools and you've seen attendance decline. You know, you continue to see that, and there's a reason it's 21. You like that number when it's, you know, when it's by yourself, because it's manageable. You know, you can help everybody. You know, they're going to get their money's worth. You know, but to continue now, I mean, it's been, you know, since 10. So we were in the first class in April of 10. So, I mean, you're over 3 years into it now on the Q school, and you're still continuing to see great numbers like that. I mean, it's got to make you feel good.
It does. It really does. And, I'm humbled by it that people would drive or fly or whatever to come in and listen to my sorry ass talk for a day and a half. But, you know, it's awesome. It's very exciting. And it's something I would have never, ever guessed would have happened to me in a million years. I'm truly humbled every time. You know, if one person signs up for the class, I'm humbled about that. It's like, okay,
yeah,
smokes, this person wants to come.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that people are, like you said, are willing to travel and part with their hard-earned money to listen to you and learn from you. I mean, there's really not much more to make you feel good. I mean, that's pretty awesome in itself. So so that's great. You got the classes going on. You got any dates for the rest of the year? Are you still thinking about when the next one's going to be.
For a class?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure because once we get out of summer in August, you know this, the FBA pretty much kicks into every weekend.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, not necessarily that I really enjoy doing classes, but cooking contests is probably my first love.
Yep.
And I just hate to miss them. And the more you do, the better you get at them and you get in a rhythm and all that good stuff. But, you know, I don't know. Nothing is on the books at this point, but, you know, after the show aired, you get a call or two when, when's your next class going to be? It's like, oh,
yep,
man, I've got one coming up. Why don't you come do this one? But I don't know. You know, Dan and I have kind of been tentatively talking about repeating a combination class about the same time in 2014. So that's, you know, I would say that one's probably pretty much a go. But as to whether or not I'll get one before that, it just depends on if there's a demand. You know, if
sure,
if I get 10 people together who want to do one here in Central Florida, I'll do it. But,
right,
you know, it's just hard to get people to agree on a date and, you know, something that works for everybody. But, yeah, I'm open for it.
Now, the one thing, speaking of upcoming contest, I hate that you're not going to be at the IPC Invitational, man.
Oh, my gosh. You know, did you guys get together and rule me out on that? Did you find out when I would be out of town?
Dude, no. I mean, it's obviously going to take some luster off of whoever wins. You know, not competing against the king of Polk County Barbecue and being able to say, you know, he was there. I mean, it's going to take – I mean, don't get me wrong. I still want to win it. But, it's going to take a little bit off of it.
Well, there will definitely be an asterisk involved. And, you
yeah,
know, down at the bottom of the page, did not include Swamp Boys, so it doesn't really count. Something like that has got to go in the record book. But, yeah, oh, man, I was so frustrated and disappointed. You know, the first time I knew anything about it was when I got the invitation on Facebook, and I went and I looked, and I, oh, man, that sounds really cool, just those Polk County guys getting out there. Because Polk County, I don't know if people realize it, but it's a freaking hotbed of cook teams.
I was talking to somebody today, and we were talking about, you know, Polk County and the amount of good teams we have here, and yeah, I mean it is. I mean that last contest that we cooked in Oviedo, I want to say 6 of the 10 top teams were all Polk County teams.
Wow, and
yeah,
I wasn't even there.
And you weren't there for that one either. We were missing a couple of key Polk County teams.
I'm so full of myself. You know, it's funny about the Polk County stuff. You know, on the Pitmasters thing, my name is Rob Bagby. We're, you know, Swamp Boys Barbecue from Winter Haven, Florida. Well, I said I'd rather say I'm from Imperial Polk County. So I go, what? And I said, let's just do it. Rob Bagby, Swamp Boys Barbecue from Imperial Polk County.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they'd make me do it again. And then, well, just to be safe, let's get one with your town in it. And I'm like, Winter Haven, Florida, and Imperial Polk County. I kept throwing in Imperial Polk County, and they kept getting frustrated with me. They wouldn't let me leave it in there.
Oh, hey, man, A for effort, brother.
I sure tried. I tried. And I said, it's not like it's not a gang or something. That's the name of our county.
Exactly. I mean, we're just, you know, we're proud to be part of Grady's County. I mean, come on.
Hell yeah.
So what's your next one?
My next one's going to be Woolly Bullies up in Live Oak. And from there, we go to Dillard, Georgia, and then Franklin, North Carolina, following weekends, three weekends in a row. And then
when is Dillard?
I believe it's the weekend after Damon, so it's like the first weekend of April or August.
Okay, so you'll be back. So you'll be back in time to cook our contest in Lakeland, right?
Yes, definitely.
Oh, good, good.
And I was, when is that in August?
No, September 6th and 7th.
Oh, yeah. I won't be gone for a month. I got to come back to work.
Weekend after Labor Day.
Right. Yeah. I was messaging Jared back and forth today, asking him if he's going to get on that proclamation stuff.
Yeah, we may need to dial up Matt Van.
Yeah.
Have Matt Van blow one in.
Oh, he could definitely get it done. If anybody could, he could.
So you're cooking that. Yeah, I, you know, there's a couple that I think I'm going to do this year that are a little. I've never cooked that Naples one that's after Mulberry.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to cook that one. I think it's
awesome
that Mulberry is the state championship this year.
I think you're probably right. I think you are. I haven't taken a good look at it, but.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the site now. I had forgot that it's actually the state championship contest, which I think is great. I mean, Bonnie's always worked her ass off with that contest, and it's a good one. Hopefully it'll get some teams from other parts of the state to come down to the county and try to see if they can take it out of here.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to let them. They're going to, Grady Judd makes an appearance at that contest, too, so.
Dude, Grady shakes a shitload of hands and kisses a lot of babies that Saturday.
Yeah, he does. Or does he shake babies and kiss hands?
Hey, if things keep going the way they are, he may be your LPD chief and your county sheriff.
Man, would that be great or what?
It would be. How about you doing anything crazy KCBS wise? You doing any traveling besides the Dillard and Franklin thing?
Nothing on the books right now. You know, it's been frustrating. I've got, I don't know, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks off in the summer?
I know.
And no contest to go to.
I know.
You know, there's been nothing within 10 hours of here. I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs, sitting on number 6, wishing there was a contest somewhere.
I didn't want to bring it up, man. I didn't want to bring up the old number 6. That deadline's coming. What is the cutoff for the Jack?
The end of August.
End of August. So, I mean, you've got, what, 3-4 contests to do it in?
I've got 3 that I know of. There's a 4th one in Georgia once I get back to work that I might go ahead and see if I can sign up for just for insurance. I don't mean just for insurance because, golly, the next 3 contests are killers.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got Live Oak, which I haven't talked to Damon, but I'm sure it's going to be 50-plus.
He's talking about 70, I think.
Yeah, so that's going to be 70. And then, you know, the other part about it is, you know, Dillard and Franklin are both waitlist contests. That's just got top competition written all over it.
Yeah, both of those, especially Dillard, just draws in teams from across the country. And, it's crazy. I mean, it's tough contests, so. KCBS isn't really my thing, so it's going to be a challenge. I'm at this point, just go ahead and have some fun and
quit
worrying about it.
And you've had a strong year so far. I mean, obviously you got the 6 grands in the Jack year, but, I mean, if you just look at the team of the year rankings, I mean, you know, you're 6, but you've only cooked 10 contests. All the other teams towards the top. I mean, I would say if you divide it by contest, you know, you and Unknown are 2 of the hottest teams right now with, you know, cooking 10 and 12 respectively, and you still got pretty good point totals. That's not to take anything away from Jim and Matt up there at the top, but, I mean, for 10 contests to be where you're sitting, it's not bad at all.
Yeah, I'll definitely take it. And we kind of had to think about that, when the Pitmasters thing came along, because, you know, at the beginning of the year, I had gone ahead and set my mind to going for the 7 again, and then the Pitmasters thing came up, and that was going to wipe out several contests. And I thought, well, you know what, the Pitmasters thing's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't dare want to take a chance on passing it up, so let's just go for it and make that a priority for this year and have fun with that.
Yeah, I mean, not the, you know, I mean, and don't get me, I mean, it's a hell of a feat. There's very few folks that qualify for the Jack through 7. I mean, 3 Eyes has already done it. QL's already done it this year. So that in itself is a great thing. But you couldn't turn down. I mean, you've done it. And another thing is you've done it before. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like it's your first run at doing it. So Yeah, I can definitely have to agree 100% with your decision that, you know, you don't know if you ever get to redo the Pitmasters thing if you would have passed on it this year, you know?
Sure, I just, with everything, I just assume I got one chance to do it and better go ahead and grab it.
Make it happen.
That way you get the opportunity.
Absolutely.
May never come this way again.
I agree, my friend, I agree. So, what do you want to hit?
Are we going to see you up at Live Oak?
Man, I had full plans on it, and when I was in France the other day, I found out we're going to have a U.S. sales meeting that Friday in Orlando.
Oh.
So, you know, and I've tried to cook. Something has came up every year I've tried to cook Damon's Contest, work-related. And so I think I'm just jinxed not to freaking cook it. So me and you probably will see each other again in, gosh, it may be, because I'm...
Impact.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely see each other at Kids Fact, because I'm taking, after that, I think I'm going to go cook Ronnie Case's event in Arkansas and Mississippi back-to-back weekends, and then instead of going to the Royal, I think I'm going to go to Atlantic City and cook his contest up there also.
That'll be a blast.
Yeah, and then we're going to go out to Nevada and do his contest and then the World Food Championships the following weekend. We're going to put some miles on here at the second half of the year, but you know that's what it's all about. That's what makes it fun, going out and meeting some of the other teams and, you know, getting to cook in different locations and all that stuff. So
definitely I'm envious of you with that regard. That's awesome that you get out. You know, that's a great opportunity you do to fly all over the place and cook like that. That's so much fun.
Yeah, and that's why I don't get, you know, too terribly upset when, you know, I can't go cook Damon's Contest because of a work thing. The one good thing about working for the French is, I was looking at it the other day, I think I still have like 5 weeks of vacation.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. I negotiated 4 when I started there, and I didn't even take 2 weeks last year, so I ended up rolling 2 over. So I think I'm going to take a little time the second half of this year and go cook some barbecue, and I think I'm going to drive... I think I'm going to drive to all of them except for obviously Nevada, because I mean the other cool thing about it is my pop's just retired, so hopefully he'll go on the road with me and we can knock a couple of them out together and just some good windshield time and catching up and make the best of it, you know.
Oh, that's awesome, man! Too cool. That's good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have some fun with it. Before I end up, I don't want to cut you short on this because I know this. This enterprise known as Rob Bagby and Swamp Boys has numerous sponsors. So I want to make sure you get, you know, it's just a privilege to share a Grizzly sponsorship with you. I mean, when I tell people, you know, not only am I sponsored by him, but Rob Bagby, I mean, it just lends total credibility to what I'm doing.
You're so full of shit.
What's up?
Seriously, I've got a Grizzly cooler in the back end of my truck right now from the class. It's had ice in it since Wednesday. It still has ice.
Oh, dude, they're absolutely awesome. I cannot speak enough about them. I mean, lifetime warranty. They're cheaper than the other brand, and they're better. I mean,
they're made in the USA.
Exactly.
Well, I got to thank Three Eyes Barbecue. I got to thank Butcher's Barbecue, Yoder Smokers, Barbecuers Delight, Grizzly Coolers, and Wicked Q. Great people to work with. I tell you, it's hard to go wrong with that group.
Dude, next time, has Jeff ever let you try any of that sugar maple charcoal of his?
No, he has not.
Dude, next time he sends you something, tell him to throw a bag in there for you.
Well, I'm going to see him at Dillard. I'll just have him bring me a pallet.
Yeah. let me know. I may go halves with you on that because I love that stuff, man. That sugar maple charcoal, that's all I run in my Southern Bread smoker. I don't add any wood to it at all.
Wow.
And I still get great color. It's a really, really good charcoal. You should definitely check it out.
I will. I didn't know anything about it. He's holding out on me.
He is, man. He is. Well, Rob, man, I appreciate the time as always, and we'll hook you back up here on the show after the semifinal round.
Chad, man, I sure appreciate you having me on. I always love talking with you. You're one of us, man.
Absolutely, man. That's what it's all about. I appreciate it, brother.
All right, buddy. Take care. See you.
Take care. See you. All right, guys. Rob Bagby, Swamp Boys. A lot of people didn't know if me and Rump could carry an hour. Shit, me and Rump could carry 2 hours if we needed to. Been a great show. Glad to be back, guys. Till next week. Next week, we already have Corey Brinson lined up from Fatbacks. He's going to be on this Sunday night's Pitmasters. So always looking forward to catching up with Corey. Great guy. Wishing them all the best in the episode this weekend. And till next week, keep the pit lit. And there's going to be an awkward silence. So I got to find the out. There we go. Maybe. There we go. Night-night, guys. See ya.
Let her go, Chadwick. Turn up your radio. Build a whiskey and drink it down slow. It's Whiskey Bent in the pit. If you don't listen, boy, you ain't shit out of Law Barbecue Show. He's an all-night smoker, a cold beer holder. His spare ribs will blow your mind. And with his Cosmos Q and his Green Mountain Grills, he'll walk the stage every time. Turn on your radio, crack a beer, Chad's ready to go. It's Whiskey Ben in the pit all night, late night. If you don't listen, boy, you ain't right. Outlaw Barbecue Show. Whiskey Ben in the Pit Radio Show. Good for the egg shakes and saggy. Can I get a raise? Hell, come on. Woo.